Hundreds of U.S. troops in Afghanistan have been killed by improvised explosive devices. This despite billions of dollars in Pentagon spending to try to blunt the impact of these IEDs. Even though some of them cost only $40 to make and are little more than plastic jugs filled with explosive ammonium nitrate fertilizer. That fertilizer is manufactured in Pakistan, and so far, U.S. military officials haven't had much success at stopping its flow across the border into Afghanistan. Greg Jaffe is a military reporter for The Washington Post. There's a link to his recent story about the fertilizer bombs at hereandnow.org. He joins us from his newspaper studio. Greg, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thanks very much.
Greg, your story begins with what I think is a very effective way of getting across the expense of this problem, and that's to compare the $40 cost of one of these bombs with how much it's costing the military to try to fight these bombs. Lay out the kind of money we're talking about.
Sure. We're really talking about $2.8, $3 billion a year, tens of millions of dollars for things like handheld ground-penetrating radar, little mini-robots, anti-ballistic underwear, of all things. $19 million on that this year.
And despite all that Pentagon spending, IEDs have wounded more than 3,000 soldiers and Marines this year. That's up more than 20% from last year. So is the Pentagon spending doing any good?
I think it is, in the sense that if you look at the ones they found on the battlefield and blown up without injuring any soldiers, that number has also risen significantly. So they're finding more of the stuff, but more and more and more of the stuff is coming across the border.
Tell us more about how these bombs work and why it is so easy to make them.
It's interesting if you look at Iraq by comparison. By the end of the conflict there, which is now drawing down, the Iraqi insurgents had developed relatively sophisticated IEDs. I mean, these were things called explosively formed penetrators. They cost around $1,500 a piece, and they would cut through armored vehicles. They were relatively, compared to the bombs in Afghanistan, easy to detect but very deadly. The ones in Afghanistan, I think what's ingenious about them is their cost and that they've got no metallic content at all.
So hard to detect by a metal detector.
Impossible. Basically, what you're looking at is fertilizer with an accelerant in it, which could be sugar or sawdust. And the blasting cap is often fashioned out of a ballpoint pen or Christmas lights.
And these are just in a plastic jug?
Sort of a ubiquitous plastic jug. Big yellow one they use for palm oil. And you see them all over the country because essentially it's the main cooking oil throughout the country. The jugs are everywhere.
Is it only this Pakistan firm you've written about, the Fatima Group, which supplies the fertilizer for most of these bombs in Afghanistan, or are there other sources?
It's the primary source. I think the U.S. military will say, you know, as much as 80%, if not more, of the bombs in Afghanistan are made from fertilizer from the two Fatima Group plants in Pakistan. The fertilizer is banned in Afghanistan, so there are no plants there. And it's easier to get it from those two plants than other places in the world that manufacture this stuff.
So although the fertilizer is banned in Afghanistan, it still gets in.
It's really easy to get across the border. I mean, once this stuff is sort of refined and processed, it looks a little bit like sugar or laundry detergent. So they actually put it in laundry detergent bags. There's a detergent in Pakistan called Bonus Detergent, and it's jokingly named the insurgent detergent because they use it to transport explosives into Afghanistan. And it's interesting, a lot of the fertilizer that makes its way into Afghanistan, most of it is used actually to grow poppy for the opium industry or in some cases crops. It's a very small percentage that makes it into bombs. But, you know, we're talking 10 to 15,000 bombs a year. So it's a lot if you're a soldier on the ground there.
Greg Jaffe, one of the key people you write about in your Post article is Lieutenant General Michael Barbero. He's leading the Pentagon effort against IEDs. He recently met with the man who is the head of the Fatima Group, this company that has two plants in Pakistan that are the primary sources in Afghanistan of fertilizer. Now, interestingly, to get a sense of how sort of Western or contemporary this head of the Fatima Group is, he met with Barbero when he was dropping his son off at college in the U.S. Is that right?
General Barbero, I think, is relatively new to this organization. He took command of it, I think, about 6 months ago, focused in quickly on this problem. So he called up the head of the Fatima group and said, hey, I'd like to meet with you next time I'm in Pakistan. And he said, no, you don't need to come to Pakistan. I'm dropping off my son in college in the U.S. a couple of weeks, and I'll stop by your office. But yeah, that totally floored me. And I think it shows at some level how complex this problem is that Barbero's taken on.
The chairman of the Fatima group who met with Lieutenant Barbero is Fawad Mukhtar. Am I saying his name correctly?
Yep, that's it.
So what is his defense? Why does he say he cannot stop his fertilizer from ending up in hands of people who use it to kill U.S. troops?
His argument is that the amount of fertilizer from his plants, it's about 480,000 pounds of it, is made into explosives. You know, that's less than 0.5% of his plant's output. And essentially, his plant manufactures the fertilizer and then sells the bags to distributors who then sell it to subsistence farmers. From what I'm told, the average subsistence farmer uses 2 to 3 bags a year, and he spreads it by hand. So you can imagine this stuff is just distributed far and wide and becomes very difficult to control. And at some level, I think the Pakistanis view these requests to stop this stuff as like, you're asking us to sort of ban the production of gunpowder or bullets, or, you know, we just can't do it.
Although isn't one of Lieutenant General Barbero's requests that if you don't ban the fertilizer, at least change its composition so it won't be as explosive?
That's what he's working with them to do, and they've said that they're cooperative. My sense is that that Fatima group is under a fair amount of pressure, both to be cooperative by some and to be not cooperative by others. And then there is the technical challenge of you've got to modify this stuff without destroying the soil, without having an impact on Pakistani farmers who need to grow these crops to survive.
Another aspect of your article that amazed me was your reference that Lieutenant General Barbero had gone to a fertilizer conference in Arlington, Virginia, where he met with industry executives to try to talk about the problem. The idea that this top military member had to go to a fertilizer conference to try to address this issue.
And well, it's actually two things, too. He went to a fertilizer conference in Denver, actually at the invitation of Mr. Mukhtar, the Pakistani who set it up for him. And then he organized his own fertilizer conference.
Now, at the first one that he didn't organize, as I read your article, the response he got from American fertilizer executives was almost blasé. They seemed to be saying, there's not much we can do. The amount of fertilizer you're talking about is so tiny that we couldn't possibly stop it from leaking out. Is that unfair characterization, that they were blasé?
At this point, they're a little cynical that you can really do anything that's going to make a difference. And their criticisms were kind of twofold. One is, yeah, you are talking about minuscule amounts, as one of them said. Hey, this is 2 rail cars worth of fertilizer. The other issue you have is that they felt like, you know, we don't understand the Pakistani fertilizer market at all. It's very different from the American one. So you're asking us for help with a problem that is really beyond our ability to understand.
And in your view, Greg Jaffe, is that fair on their part? I mean, how can they truly be expected to try to stop 0.5% from leaking out?
No, I don't think they can. And I don't think General Barbero necessarily expects that, although he'll say that, look, this is a global problem. Yes, stuff is blowing up in Pakistan and Afghanistan now, but fertilizer bombs are used around the world and have even been used in the U.S. And therefore, it's up to you guys to get your head around this problem, both for your own benefit and for ours.
Washington Post military reporter Greg Jaffe and his story about the improvised explosive devices, IEDs, that are killing and wounding military troops and civilians in Afghanistan. The bombs are cheap. They can cost only $40 to make. And for an explosive, they use ammonium nitrate fertilizer, made at 2 plants in neighboring Pakistan. The plants are owned by the Fatima Group, which is run by a man named Fawad Mukhtar. U.S. Lieutenant General Michael Barbero is leading the Pentagon's effort to try to stop the flow of this fertilizer into Afghanistan, and he met with Mukhtar earlier this year. But the general is also working with fertilizer makers here in the U.S. on ways to modify it to make it less explosive. Greg, tell us what some of those proposed modifications are.
Well, a couple that they hope will be successful, and I think we'll still have to test them and see. The biggest one is to make these fertilizer bombs. Already, the industry, since about the 1970s, and this was developed in response to the IRA in the United Kingdom that used fertilizer bombs, they started adding calcium carbonate to it. So the fertilizer is essentially known as calcium ammonium nitrate. And the calcium prevents the fertilizer bombs from exploding or from being as deadly. But what the insurgents in Afghanistan has figured out is that if you put the calcium ammonium nitrate in water, you heat the water a little bit, the insoluble calcium falls to the bottom of the pot, and the ammonium nitrate, which is soluble, stays in the solution. So then you pour out the ammonium nitrate and you dry it out, and you get a very powerful sort of crystallized explosive that's more powerful than TNT. Now, what they looked at was, is there stuff we can add to that solution that mixes in with the ammonium nitrate that either makes it hard to dry because it's hydrophilic and sort of soaks up water, or that dampens the explosion? And one of those things is coated urea fertilizer granules, that if you mix those in, it makes it really hard to dry out.
So there are things that can be done to make fertilizer less explosive. Why aren't we seeing them happen?
I think they need to get out in the field and try and test them, see if they don't damage farming, see if they can be done kind of quickly and effectively. And I think their hope is that they get something in place by the next fighting season, which would be spring of 2012. But part of the reason it hasn't happened before is that I don't think there's been enough of a focus on the problem. And I think you could argue that we've kind of approached the problem, and by we, I guess I mean the U.S. military, has approached the problem in the wrong way. They've been looking for really big high-tech solutions rather than focusing on the explosive material itself. You know, trying to come up with sophisticated ground-penetrating radars, armoring up vehicles, all sorts of things that are very expensive that may have had some impact, although I think it's hard to tell. This is a way of going to the source. But, I mean, you can even argue that this is going to work for a while probably, and then the insurgents will figure out a way around it. The hope is, though, you can buy yourself a couple of fighting seasons here in which you can make it harder for them, and that will save some lives.
When Lieutenant General Barbero met with a conference of fertilizer industry executives, he seemed to be trying to enlist their voluntary help to fight this problem. But he also warned of regulation of the industry if the executives didn't find a way to help voluntarily. But what good is it to regulate the U.S. fertilizer industry if the main source of the problem is a Pakistani fertilizer plant?
No, that's a good point. I mean, his argument would be that ammonium nitrate fertilizer has been used prominently in acts within the U.S. You remember the failed Times Square bombing last year. That truck had ammonium nitrate fertilizer in it that was going to be used as explosive material. Obviously, it didn't go off there. The Oklahoma City bombing was ammonium nitrate fertilizer. I think his point is that, look, yeah, this stuff is killing soldiers in Afghanistan, and that's my primary worry. But it could be used here in the United States, and as soon as that happens, you guys are going to have a lot of problems. So let's figure out how to get ahead of this right now.
The U.S. and Pakistan have a very shaky relationship right now, of course. It was only made worse from Pakistan's perspective by the killing of Osama bin Laden. When Lieutenant General Barbero sent one of his chemists to Pakistan, Pakistan later accused that man of working for the CIA. How crippled do you view the U.S. and Pakistan relationship right now? And is it possible that Pakistan even wants to work with us to reduce this problem?
Yeah, it's certainly pretty crippled. And it is possible that significant elements within Pakistan don't want to work with us to solve this problem. Now, if you're asking me about the Fatima group and where do they come down, you know, to be honest, I don't know. We'd hoped to talk to Mr. Mukhtar for this story, but that didn't happen. The Fatima group did actually send a representative to this fertilizer conference that General Barbero held here in Arlington. And he was an active participant and seemed to be really eager to push to a solution. He did talk about the need to modify the fertilizer and made the point that it's killing Pakistani soldiers as well as American soldiers. By the same token, when General Barbero sends a guy to their plant, you know, they host him. He has a great visit. He's really excited to see how their plant works. He leaves, and there's stories in the Pakistani press alleging that he's a CIA operative and a hitman out to destroy the Pakistani people. So he's quick to say, I'm never going back to Pakistan again. So it's really complicated.
Greg Jaffe, your Washington Post story ends with a line about Lieutenant General Barbero's goal being to have some sort of solution in place for the fertilizer problem before the summer fighting season next year. Can you anticipate what that fighting season is going to look like coming about 2 years before the scheduled U.S. troop withdrawal?
Yeah, my gut is that it would probably look a little bit like the last two we've gone through, which has been fairly significant violence. A lot of IEDs, you know, buried bombs, primarily oriented against U.S. foot patrols. I think we'll likely see the size of the U.S. force come down, you know, between now and then. There's some drawdowns that are already planned. The surge of about 30,000 troops is supposed to be out by kind of next summer, kind of in the middle of the fighting season. That's supposed to be over. That'll bring the U.S. force down to about 70,000. There will be fewer U.S. troops on the ground. And the question, I think, that we'll all have to wait and see is whether Afghan troops can fill the void. If they can't, I think that that will allow the Taliban insurgency to move into a bunch of areas that have been denied them by U.S. forces, by the addition of U.S. forces, which pushed them out of their traditional havens. And so now it's up to the Afghan troops to hold that territory. And I think there's a lot of debate as to whether they'll be able to do it effectively.
Greg Jaffe is a military reporter for The Washington Post. Greg, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.